Hello and welcome to the Sacred City Life Podcast. This is your host, Pastor Justin Dean. And this podcast is all about helping you follow Jesus in the everyday, normal rhythms of life. I got two gentlemen on the podcast with me. Guys, would you introduce yourselves?
Kevin Knorr, counseling pastor.
Alex Tate, Sacred City Youth Director.
All right. Well, we got a question into the podcast about feminism, about... Well, the question was basically, hasn't feminism been a net positive for the world or for our society? And to answer that question, we need to go back and kind of understand the history of feminism.
Yep.
The more that I study history and these things, obviously the more that I learn, and the more frustrated I get at the narrow, well, it was either a very narrow understanding that I got in school, or I just wasn't paying attention.
Sure.
You know, it's probably right. could have been both yep. and on that Same one. Because I think most people, if you ask them that question, hasn't feminism been a net positive? I think most people would probably say, yeah, sure. I think it has. That's not my answer.
Why would they say that, though?
Because there's more opportunities for women.
Mm.
And I think we have been, indoctrinated to believe that a woman... I mean, we would say things like this, like, she's more than just a stay-at-home mom. She's more than just a wife. She's more than just, like, it's almost like a negative to just be a woman who's married, to one husband, to have babies, to want to serve that family. Like, there's this narrative that that's not enough.
Yeah.
You need more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so women have more opportunities. Like, women... I'm going to give away some of my thing. Women can go get shot on the battlefield if they want to.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Women can be president if they want to. Women can be a CEO if they want to. Women can choose to ignore their biology and pursue a career and make money, like a man can make money, right?
Right.
They can do all those things. And so most people would say, well, that's a net positive. I'm looking around at our world and I'm seeing a whole lot of negatives and I'm tracing a whole bunch of it back to feminism.
Yeah.
Now I think just so I'm not laying all the blame at feminism's feet, I think all the blame goes to secularism or idolatry. And feminism served the purpose of secularism.
Mm.
Feminists gave people another idol to worship.
Yeah.
And instead of reforming, there's always going to be things in a society, even if it's Christian, there's always going to be things in society that need reformation, that need a preacher, like preaching against an idol and people repenting. And new legislation need to be written, and there's always going to need to be reformation, right?
Yeah. We're
on this side of glory. There's always going to be sin, and sinners are going to find interesting way to take advantage of other sinners. And so, I'm fine. Like, I am not a conservative in the sense I want to conserve some time in our history that was ideal. I'm a conservative in the fact that I want to conserve scripture, biblical ideals, biblical norms, and I want to progressively apply them to society.
Yeah.
Right? I want us to be continuing. I mean, that's the mantra of a reformed church is reformed, semper reformanda, right?
Yeah.
Reformed and always reforming.
Yeah.
So we want to obviously conserve what we need to conserve, but we want to reform.
Yeah.
And when it comes to, the net result of feminism, I think what we're going to find out is late stage feminism or fourth wave feminism is the snake that is eating itself.
Yeah.
And many of the founders would be rolling over in their grave. They'd be really frustrated. But let me just cut it short for you if you want to get it. To say that women are equal to men in basically all things, you end up in transgenderism.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Where a man can say he's a woman and take away her national championship swimming trophy.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can't even be the best woman you could be. Because now men are trying to take that over too in that area. Yeah,
for sure.
Mm.
And it's all kind of the same logic, and it's in some sense it's illogical.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into so this is where like feminism is at an end.
Yeah.
Because the T in the LGBTQ+ is using all of the same tactics.
Right.
To take over women's sports, women's areas, women's restrooms, et cetera, et cetera. Right? So this is kind of an interesting topic. And let me just say my hot take right away.
Uh-oh.
This one might get me in trouble.
Mm.
I think at its core, okay, first off, I am not denying that there were injustices and, you know, things that needed to be overcome and things that needed to be reformed. That's not what I'm saying. But I think at its core, feminism is the sin of envy.
Mm. Mm.
It's certain women looking at certain men and saying, I deserve to be there. Why do you get to have that and I don't get to have that?
Mm.
Now, there's a sense of that where that's baked into America, right? That's baked into, like, well, we would almost say that's good. Like, yeah, why can't he have that when she can't have that, right? And there may be some really good reasons and that we have never thought of before, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think at its core, though there were some real injustices and things that needed to be addressed and debated and whatever, I think at its core was the sin of envy.
Mm-hmm.
And I will do my best to prove that to you. And we're going to do this by going all the way back to, let's just say, the best version. Mm-hmm. The best version of feminism, first wave feminism, over 100 years ago, right? That's where we're going to go back to begin.
Yeah.
Right? And so let's just start on like point number three there, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you go ahead and kind of get us started here.
I can do that, yeah. Interesting thing about around that time. So feminism began in July of 1848, really, in earnest, at a Seneca Falls convention.
Wait, this is the first time that women in the history of the world realized that they could have everything a man could have, or they could do everything a man could do?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
Not the first time, but bear with me. Here's a connection I made a moment ago while you were talking. Marx's Communist Manifesto was printed in February of 1848 for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then this conference happens in July of 1848.
Okay, and Marxism teaches you to think through one worldview,
mm-hmm.
and that is the oppressed
mm-hmm.
and the oppressor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in biblical history, we have, let's just say, 6,000 years before Christ, and we've got 1,848 years after Christ,
mm-hmm.
okay? So almost 8,000 years of human history. I know, you know, evolutionists say much more. But in 8,000 years, we're not thinking in these categories.
Right.
Men have their role. Women have their role. Men don't want to be women. I don't think very many women wanted to be men.
Right.
Like, we don't have large movements of this. And then all of a sudden,
it wasn't even a thought.
The same within 3 months, Marx
mm-hmm.
publishes the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah.
Which teaches there is no God. There is only the oppressed and mm-hmm. the oppressor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts teaching people to think in that category. And you read that kind of stuff and you start, most of the time, you start wanting to find yourself in an oppressed category.
Right.
Because to be an oppressed category, it gives you a mission in life, it gives you a purpose, and it gives you cultural capital. It gives you some a platform to stand on.
And an enemy to stand against.
And an enemy. To, yeah. It separates people from friends and enemy. There's a friend and enemy distinction,
yeah.
Right? So this is happening in 1848. Mm-hmm. It's tied to the first Women's Rights Convention in Seneca Falls, New York. It was run by Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Stanton declared that all men and women were created equal. That sounds fine.
Yeah.
Right? And thus, she advocated for women's education. Well, that's kind of college education.
Right.
Women were educated up until high school, and then after high school, it was largely a domestic education that they received. Right? They continued education, but it was largely domestic. Her job was seen as to be wife, homemaker, and she needed an education to do that. She needed to learn how to run a home, manage a home, manage affairs. So most of the time, did not go to college. All right? So not when it says women's education, it's like, in, you know, you would think like these women can't read or something, you know. And their right to own property and organizational leadership. And the conference resulted in 300 women signing Stanton's Declaration of Sentiments. Okay, so this is really the first feminist manifesto, mm-hmm. the Declaration of Sentiments. And I would encourage people to go read that.
Yep.
You can find it on Wikipedia. It's pretty easy to read. It is copied off of the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, yeah.
And they just changed language. They changed, you know, all men are created in the, you know, and it says men and women. They added gender inclusive mm-hmm. language right. into it. They, and then they put this in kind of oppressor and oppressed categories.
Yeah.
Right? They're the ones that have been oppressed and they need to rise up against the government. Where when in the Declaration, it was, we were being invaded, right? We were being, the Declaration of Independence happened because Britain was invading. Mm-hmm. They had standing army in. They were quartering soldiers without trial. We were being taxed and without representation in Parliament. There were clear injustices going on. And so we wrote the Declaration of Independence, right? And we said, no, we're not doing it anymore. Well, now we're not talking about violence. We're talking about women saying, oh yeah, us too. Mm-hmm. We're oppressed too. Mm-hmm. Mm. And we can't vote. Mm-hmm. We can't get a college education, which would mean we can't be doctors. We can't be lawyers. We can't be quote unquote professionals. And that's not fair. That's not fair.
Right.
Right.
And they went even a step farther in that Declaration of Sentiments. And so one of these bullet points that you're talking about, it says men specifically, has usurped the prerogative of God himself, claiming it as his right to assign for her a sphere of action when that belongs to her conscience and her God.
What do you think that means, Kevin?
That men saying, hey, actually, I don't think that this would be good for you. I don't think this would be a good path for you to take. So they're saying that men have completely shut the doors and taken all authority away from God.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Well, here's what I want you to see. And I want you to read the one about ministers as well. Because this document, Feminism 101 in the very beginning, was built on egalitarianism. Mm-hmm. It was built on men and women are equivalent. Not just they have, you know, equal rights before God, but they're equivalent. So anything a man can do, a woman should be able to do it. All right? Now, we immediately think, yeah, well, men can vote, women should vote. And if you go and this is a bigger topic, and maybe we'll do a whole podcast on this. If somebody writes in and asks for us to do one, we'll do one on this, on the voting rights in America. Because I want us to just think through this logically. When our country was founded, you had to be 21 years old to vote, and you had to be a landowner. Mm-hmm. Okay? You had to own property. Now, why? Because you had a vested interest in the productivity and output and outcome of our society.
Yeah, roots.
There's something, voting can be very dangerous if I'm only voting for a person who will promise to give me things. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's dangerous. Right.
Isn't that what people do, though?
100%.
Well, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
Because the government, you know, they're taxing us, right? And they should be, we should want the lowest taxes possible. Because big government and big institutions do not manage money well, right? Local people manage their money in a more conservative fashion than big government does, right? Mm-hmm. And so the whole notion of democracy, I know we're in a republic, but the whole notion of democracy can be very dangerous. Because if you give ignorant, uneducated, sinful, selfish people the right to vote, they could vote all kind of stupid things into law.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I think all the rich people should give me free education. Yeah, I think all the rich people should buy me a house. I think all the rich people should pay all my bills, and I should just be able to sit here and do nothing because I have a right to it. Mm. Right? Now, that's a real reality.
Yeah.
Right? And so, not only that, but we look up when the draft came in, but here's the other issue. Men fight wars.
Yeah.
Why do they get a right to vote? Because they'll die for it. Mm. They own land, and so they have roots in a community, and they want to see it flourish. They don't want to see, you know, its rivers destroyed, you know. They don't want to see its land ruined and polluted because they're connected to the land in ways that single people just aren't. They're out there, you know what I mean? If you just want to make a buck, you don't really care. You'll move to the next town.
Yeah.
So what would you say to a person that may ask, like, well, if all the men are, you know, you said going to war and fighting for it and dying for it, what are the women supposed to do at home? Shouldn't they work? Shouldn't they do all these different things to keep, you know, society moving and taking care of their families?
Oh, they do oftentimes. They have to in times of war. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to in times of war. But again, that's times of war.
Yeah.
But primarily, it depends on what kind of living that man had made. But the women worked anyways. Like, you're not talking about, like, a lot of people were agrarian. It was more of an agrarian society, right? So, you know, our founding fathers, many of them had farms.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's not like the women weren't out there working.
Yeah, yeah.
They were working. It was just they were focused on their home, right? They weren't focused on
working in the home.
Working in the home, on the farm, around, you know, doing things like that. But if dad's home, dad's driving the plow.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Dad's splitting the wood. But if dad's not home, then, yeah, she is capable. She's not as capable of doing those things as he is. Mm-hmm. He's built for it. He's stronger. He's bigger. All those things happen, right? But the right to vote just didn't fall out of the sky. Mm-hmm. In our country, it was earned. You had to be, being a landowner was a sign of someone who was respected, somebody who had earned a station in life. Now, maybe it was passed down from fathers and grandfathers, and it meant something, right? And then, obviously, being willing to go to war meant something as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, the right to vote was limited to white people, right, until late 1800s.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons, obviously, the Civil War happens, and this is happening right after the Civil War, by the way.
Yeah.
The Civil War happens. African Americans join in the fight against the South. And the South surrenders, and And, you know, Lincoln is and Grant are victorious, and they give the right to vote. So that would have been the, is that the 15th?
Yes,
15th Amendment?
I believe so.
That's the 15th Amendment. So these African-American men, they were fighting, right? And they had, many people were saying, they've earned the right. They don't own property yet, but they've earned the right to vote. Well, and then many of them were given property. And then when Lincoln was assassinated and the vice president took his role, the vice president canceled that and took it back. It was a shameful, shameful play by him. But what's going on at this time is there's this women's rights convention, and these women, and by the way, many people say these were Christian women. Most of these women were not Christian women. Right. And we've already covered that in the past.
So at this conference you're talking about, so this women's rights convention came on the heels of a lot of these founding ladies, Mott and Stanton. They had attended a civil rights conference, right, rallying for the right for African Americans to be able to vote, African American men specifically. And so when they attended this, and they saw that, oh, hey, only the men were permitted to speak, meaning on the floor to vote and to debate and to argue. And so they were they had to sit in the visitors section, essentially. So it was specifically the white men who were allowed to vote and wrestle through these things. And so they decided, hey, that's not fair. They basically said that they didn't believe that African-American men should have the right to vote before white women.
Yeah.
And so where they started as kind of these allies, if you will, to the civil rights movement, you see kind of that first branch in that instance. And so this women's convention with these 300 ladies came as a reaction to the fact that they didn't think it was right still for African-Americans to have what we might call superior rights to white women.
Yeah.
Which is
envy.
Envy, for sure.
Which is envy. We think we deserve the right to vote before black men do.
Yeah.
Right? Well, it's racism, for one, and it's envy. And again, the black men went and fought for the country.
Yeah.
Right? So we see right away, and then Susan B. Anthony, you know, she was a Quaker.
Yeah.
And we need to know this. Quakers are not Christians.
Right.
Quakers are crazy people. I mean, that they started out super crazy if you study it. But then it gets into more like deist, and then she becomes an agnostic by the end of her life. So she was not a Christian. Susan B. Anthony was not a Christian. So this has become like the women's suffrage movement. Mm-hmm. They're wanting the right to vote.
Yeah.
And man, I just, and they have a lot of issues going on within the movement with racism specifically. Yeah. And you see like right away, and this is like there's a lot of activism going on. There's a lot of stunts going on. One of the most notable feminists was Emily Davidson.
Yeah.
She'd went to prison several times. And then in 1913, she died as she stepped in front of the king's horse at the Epsom Derby, causing her to be trampled by a horse.
Yeah.
So then
she's trying to stop the horse in protest.
Yeah, yeah. This is just like right now we've got militant activists lighting themselves on fire. One did it last week in front of the Trump's courthouse.
Right.
And we had another one do it at the Israeli embassy or something. I can't remember which state that was in.
Yeah.
But these radical activist, outbursts to change public sentiment, basically.
Yeah, the word militant became kind of this glamorous thing, right? It was, well, I mean, really, if you think about it, these women more than likely saw themselves, or they were seen as stepping out in a fight, in a war against a system. And so to take that title of militant, excuse me, would have been kind of a step in that direction.
Yeah. And I just want to, I don't think we've thought about who should have the right to vote. Right? Very, very much.
Right.
One of the reasons they were that many people were pushing back on African Americans at the time is because they couldn't read. Many of them could not read. And so many states would put in the in their state constitutions on voting rights that you had to be able to read.
Sure.
Right? I mean, you would think that you would need some level of information.
Yeah.
Right? Not that you have to read, but do you know what you're voting for?
Right.
Right? Do you know what you're voting for? What is this act that you're doing? Who gets it? Now, we've lowered the age to 18. So and I would be like, thing. It's like, does an 18-year-old know what he's doing? Does an 18-year-old know, or does he all he know what is what he saw on TikTok? Hmm. He saw some advertisement, and this guy says he's going to pay for my college.
Right, right,
right. And I'm just presenting these arguments. I'm not, you know, coming down one way or the other. But there's got to be some kind of minimum requirements. Like, can a legal immigrant vote? Why or why not? Does it? Should there be some kind of requirement that you're making an active investment into our society? Mm-hmm. Right? If a million Muslims move into the Quad Cities, you know, should they be able to vote for Sharia law or whatever else they want to do? Right? Like, I think we just need to think about.
Yeah. We definitely need more curiosity, right? To recover asking critical questions, to dig inside of a worldview and understand, hey, where did this actually come from? Because otherwise, we're just presented with the shiny veneer of the women's suffrage movement.
Well, but it's even more than that now. Like now, like Democrats are saying to require someone to bring their driver's license to vote is voter suppression. That's voter suppression, right? And they're trying to tie that back in. That's like denying women the right to vote. That's like denying black people the right to vote. That's like, it's like, wait, bringing a driver's license?
I got it on me right now.
Bringing a driver's license is voter suppression, you know? So I think this is kind of a wider issue. It's so reason I'm bringing this up is I don't want us to think that the right to vote is based on maleness alone.
Right.
It wasn't based on maleness alone. Just the ability to go to war and fight and die. We have a draft.
Yep.
And as of right now, men are the only ones who are available for that draft. You turn 16, you go get your driver's license, you got to sign up for that thing.
Right.
You don't get a choice.
Right.
So if America goes to war, you get drafted.
Right.
If they need us.
Right.
Right? Women don't get drafted. But, ladies, if the feminist movement has its way, the end is ladies get drafted too. Mm-hmm.
For true equality.
For true equality. How could a woman have any right to say, no, I'm staying home? A man doesn't have that right.
Right. Right. There has to be a distinction between male and female to make that argument.
Right. Right. And this is where I think it's the movement began in envy, even though there was some real issue. It began in envy and it wasn't based in reality. Right. It was based at looking, well, he gets to vote. That's not fair. I should be able to vote.
Yeah. And even following that envy trail, if you think in terms of, and maybe this is something we can cover in a different podcast in greater detail. But the Industrial Revolution had, I think it ended in 1840, something like that. And so this was really, so Tate, you asked the question, should women work outside the home or can they provide for the home? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Industrial Revolution was really the first time that these businesses found ways to kind of split apart that household and say, okay, well, you know, husband, you have to work because you're a man. But hey, wife, actually, you can provide too. Hey. You got 10-year-olds, they can crawl inside these gears and they can do things too, right? And so it was kind of I'm sure it was also kind of a precursor to this mentality where women are starting to go, oh, I can work outside of the home.
Yeah.
I want to do more of that.
Yeah, right. Well, and it wasn't all women because there's plenty of women who resisted
right.
the suffrage movement and saw the writing on the wall in the beginning. Because economically speaking, businesses, it's good for business. So if you go from only being able to employ 50% of the population to now arguably now you double the workforce, what does that do to wages?
Wages go down.
Wages go down. Supply and demand. Wages go down. So for the people owning these factories and owning these large businesses, this makes good sense for them. Now we've got, you know, obviously not 100% of people are going to be in the workforce because not every woman are going to go, but you're drastically increasing your supply of labor, which lowers take-home pay, basically.
Yeah.
So during this time, men would have they used to call it a working wage.
Yeah.
It was enough. We'll pay this man basically enough to take care of a family.
Right.
Right. But now if dad and mom are both in the workforce, actually both are getting paid. I mean, you're not going to be doubling your income.
Right.
Right. Because of the way supply and demand works.
Yeah.
And so it's actually benefiting the industrialists.
Definitely.
It's benefiting the employers, and it's benefiting the government.
Yeah.
Because their taxes are going up. Now they've got two people to tax and you're buying more than likely your standard of living goes up. You buy more goods, on and on and on it goes.
So that essentially one member of the couple is paying to provide for the home and the other member of the couple is paying to provide for the government, the taxes and industrialism.
Yeah. Yep. So I think I would just like even our ladies to think about that. What if the end result of feminism is you get signed up for a draft?
Mm-hmm.
And the next world war, because I'm sure there will be, could be brewing right now, you get drafted along with your husband. I mean, that's terrifying.
Who's taking the kids?
That's terrifying.
The government.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. They'll take care of them.
Janissaries, modern Janissaries.
Gosh. Okay. So, this... Now, here's where it gets even uglier. In order for a woman, here's the thinking, first wave feminist. In order for a woman to be as free as a man, to be as free in the workplace as a man, she has to have the ability to not get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're like, well, everybody has the ability to not get pregnant. Just don't have sex. But because men have the ability to have sex and not get pregnant, women look at that right given to them by God or nature or however you want to say it, and they envy that.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, that's not fair. He can get 10 women pregnant and never miss a day at work.
Right.
If I have sex like he has sex and I get pregnant, I could miss months of work.
Yeah.
That takes me out of the workforce. Not only that, but then I got to take care of these kids. It's going to cost me 18 and a half years of my life at least.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fair. And so right away, first wave feminism, as this movement developed, reproductive rights became a significant issue for women. In 1916, Margaret Sanger opened the first birth control clinic in the United States.
Yeah.
This move was made in defiance of the New York state law that forbade the distribution of contraception, and Sanger would later go on to found the clinic that became Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And Sanger was a racist.
Yeah.
Sanger began this Planned Parenthood, which still, I think the number is something like 85% of all Planned Parenthood clinics are in African-American neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Hear that. 85% of all Planned Parenthood clinics are in African-American neighborhoods. Why? Because she believed in eugenics, which is the belief that, I'll just say it like this, some races are superior to others, they're genetically superior to others, and we must wipe out in this should... You, this should be, this is 1916 here. Hear this before World War One, World War Two, yeah. right? And this is where some of Hitler's beliefs came from,
yeah.
Of the superior race. And so she planted these Planned Parenthoods in primary African-American neighborhoods in order to wipe out the black race.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what she wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the foundation that Planned Parenthood wants to erase. They just want to memory hole that. Mm-hmm. That Planned Parenthood was started with the belief of eugenics.
Yeah.
Superior races. There's superior genes and superior races over others. And so, this, and what do I mean by that? Reproductive rights. I mean abortion. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, there's contraception, but there's abortion. There's all this kind of stuff going on there. That is tied up with the first wave
yeah.
of feminism. What many of us would say is, you know, people tell me the Christian side of it. The Christian, you know, it's the very beginning. It's just, and it's enmeshed
yeah.
with secular egalitarian envy. I mean, it's just
envy and racism.
It's mm-hmm. just, yeah. I mean, so how much of that do you want to claim?
Me? None.
Right? It's it's godless.
Yeah.
And in one of those points, I forgot one of those points, the goal was for women to be able to be pastors.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. want me to read that?
Yeah.
So there's two of these. He closes against her all the avenues to wealth and distinction which he considers most honorable to himself. As a teacher of theology, medicine, or law, she is not known. And then he allows her in church as well as state, but a subordinate position, claiming apostolic authority for her exclusion from the ministry, and with some exceptions, from any public participation in the affairs of the church.
Okay. Here we say, they're saying, in this first declaration of first wave feminism,
yeah.
we want to be pastors. Mm-hmm. We want to be theologians. We want to be lawyers. We want to be doctors. We want to be all these things. And men are the enemy. Right? Men are the enemy.
Yeah.
It's if you turn this on its head, if a man really believed that, right? Like that he was just trying to keep them out of all of these different areas. He would say something like, "Well, but whose money have you been spending all these years?" Right?
Right?
Like, literally, who put the roof over your head? Who pays for the food? Who pays for the clothes? And if this was just, like, about money, he would be like, yeah, go out and go work, because then you would bring that money home. That we would be a dual, this is how many people think today, we'd be a dual income family. We'd be able to buy more things.
Right.
But there was something more going on. It was a patriarchal society, mm-hmm. and men felt it was their responsibility to provide and protect. And women had their domain, which was primarily their home.
Yeah.
And it didn't keep them from necessarily getting an education if they wanted an education, or having side businesses and different things. But the primary goal was to serve the family. Mm-hmm. That was the goal. Raise the kids, right? See to the household. Manage our affairs.
Yeah.
Do these different things. But this feminist movement created this man versus woman problem. That the men are the bad guys, and the women, I mean, the men are the one controlling the women and just keeping them, it's like this, keeping them out of all the fun places.
They're the oppressors.
Mm. Like, men are like, you know, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're politicians, they're fighting. These are not fun professions.
Right.
These are stressful professions.
Yeah.
They're seeing death on a daily basis. They're dealing with very difficult cases. They're carrying heavy loads of stress, and they don't want their wives to carry that.
Right.
Because their wives are carrying different type of stress, emotional stress and relational stress and all the stuff that's going on at home and at the church and all these different places in a supportive role. And feminism reframed all of that into oppressor and oppressed categories.
Right.
Men are trying to keep something from us, which is the same lie that Satan said in the garden. To Adam and Eve, right? God's keeping something from you.
He's holding out on
you. And now, I'm going to say, we're going to jump way ahead. Now, women can do whatever they want. Hmm. And they are the most depressed, mm-hmm. unfulfilled category sociological category in America today.
Yeah.
Highest rates of depression, lack of satisfaction in their life.
Eating disorders.
I mean,
suicide rates.
Why would you say that? Because they're carrying too much weight?
Men still have the highest suicide rates, I think. You could Google that real quick.
Check.
Google that. What?
Is it because they're carrying the weight that the male should be carrying, so they're kind of sink into a lot of these depression categories?
I think, one, the sin of envy.
Mm.
Once you feel you're oppressed, like, women, I think Hillary Clinton's a funny example, because she gets as high up as she could possibly get and still feels like she's oppressed, and there's a glass ceiling that she couldn't break through to become president,
yeah.
Right? Filthy rich, wealthy beyond most of our imagination, right? Had a prestigious and, I mean, a one-in-a-lifetime type of life, right? Like, just could buy whatever she wants,
yeah.
Right? And still she feels like she's oppressed.
Yeah.
And she's not, clearly, not a happy woman.
Right, right.
Right? So once you start thinking in these lenses, envy is never satisfied. Envy is never satisfied. It makes you miserable, right? But then you get the natural creation that the woman is more relational. She's made to have babies. She's made to take care of those babies. She's made to function within the home primarily. And that is a full-time job.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right? For 18 to 25 years or whatever it is. And then they're taking corporate responsibilities on as well.
Yeah.
They're taking masculine stress on as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah. And then there's, I think it's called hypergamy. There's hypergamy issues in there too, because women, statistically, women want to date and marry a man who's more successful than they are, culturally, financially. And the higher up in the echelon a woman goes, the narrower her pool of husbands become.
Yeah.
Right?
Because right now there's a lot more women that are educated than men, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Far more women are going to college and getting college degrees. And men are just opting out. Number one, they're saying they don't need to, that the college is mainly a joke unless you're going into the STEM fields. They don't need to go there and feel and take gender studies classes and be told that they've been oppressing women their whole life, when they're like, what are you talking about, oppressing women my whole life? Like, I've never done any of that.
Yeah.
They'll go be a contractor, a carpenter, or HVAC guy, and they can make six figures in a handful of years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're like, no. But that creates a problem, because by and large, a college-educated woman won't choose a man like that. Right?
Right.
And then, so then she's more likely to marry later in life, which increases, I mean, it makes it a lot more difficult to find a husband. She's got less years to actually have a baby, which adds stress and frustration, and that ties it back into the IVF stuff. They start freezing, you know, eggs and all kind of stuff. And many of them won't get married or get married too late. They've got everything they want from career, and they realize career isn't enough.
Right.
Career doesn't satisfy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So that suicide rate, men are 3 to 4 times more likely to quote unquote succeed. Right. So I remember when I was in school, they said men will use more lethal means.
Yeah.
But women are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide.
Okay. All right. So we were both right on that. So women attempt suicide more. I want to make a joke there.
It's a bad
success. Hold on. How do you
men succeed?
Yeah, I was going to say, how do they
attempt? No offense, ladies, but yeah. Men are better at killing themselves than you even the girls are. Because men, it's not an attempt. It's not just a cry for attention. It's not just men blow their brains out. Men jump off a bridge. Men hang themselves.
Yeah.
You know, which is sad. And
yeah.
We're not encouraging anybody switching numbers on that. So just
This brings up another interesting topic, though. Because when we go back to, were women oppressed? If you looked at life expectancy, men would appear to be more oppressed than women, because women lived longer by quite a bit, a big margin. Women live longer than men. Why? Because men were doing hard, horrible things. They were going to war. They were digging ditches, and that hole could collapse on them. They were building bridges, and that bridge could collapse on them, right? They were in stressful careers. They take more risk. They do riskier things. And so their life, they didn't live as long as women.
Yeah.
Right? So this whole category, I think, really collapses. And were there bad men? Of course. Always. There always are bad men. Bad men are a problem. Were there abusive men? Yes. Abusive men are a problem. But feminism hasn't changed that.
Right.
There's still bad men. There's still oppressive men. Right? But good men don't want their good women to have to go into fields and do things that suck.
Yeah.
That cause trauma, that cause pain and turmoil. They want to provide and protect their families.
Right.
So, man, I just push back on this idea that from the beginning of the, you know, American Constitution, that men were trying to oppress women by not giving them the right to vote. Mm. There were good reasons. There were good, logical, rational reasons. Mm. I'm not saying that they're right, but there's good, logical, rational reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think the seeds of secularism, the seeds of idolatry, were all through the first wave of feminist movement.
Definitely.
And we should, and now look what it's growing, right? Look what it has produced.
Yeah.
And so I would say, has it been a net positive? I would say no, it has not.
Right.
It's been a net negative.
Right.
And we know right now, if Joe Biden wins the next election, there's only one reason he wins the next election. Mm-hmm. And that's women voting to kill their babies.
Yeah.
That brings it back full circle.
Definitely.
Women will put a doddering old man who can't even string a sentence together, who is running our country and has his finger on nuclear buttons. They will give him 4 more years. He's 82, I think, right?
Yeah.
82.
Man.
He'll be 86. They're willing to give him 4 more years of power so that they can kill their babies. Mm. That's a sobering thought.
Yeah.
That's a sobering thought. So, first wave feminism ended about 1920, mm-hmm. and then it only gets worse from there.
Yep.
So, will we do other podcasts on this? I don't know. You tell us. The first wave had enough issues, and it only gets crazier from there.
More right? podcasts are coming.
Yeah, we'll see. So, I know I said some things. I know I made some statements. I think feminism began in envy. It began on a bad foundation. And Jesus said, if you build on any other foundation other than the word of God, then it's sinking sand and it will be destroyed.
Right.
And so I think feminism is on its last leg and it is being destroyed from within.
Yeah.
Women with their own ideology here, I mean, from the very beginning, gave the future transgender men the steering wheel. And they're driving it off the cliff.
Yeah.
Right? So, all right, guys. I know I could have created some problems here, but if you've got questions, you can email Alex at Alex. No, you can email me, JustinDean@sacredcitychurch.com. I would love to answer them. This is obviously not the full scope of the feminist movement, but hopefully a pretty good introduction. Guys, we really do. We love you. We're praying for you. God bless.